Welcome to the fourth episode of the SAC podcast. I'm your host, Claire Moken, and today I will be joined by Imran Nouri, a recent OSU graduate. Imran graduated from Ohio State in 2020, and during his time at Ohio State, he served as the president of Buckeye-thon, as well as was involved in many different things at Ohio State. Since graduating, he started a nonprofit for about 2 years before switching to work in marketing for a startup. Then he decided to quit his job and lived in his car for a few months to ask 1,000 strangers for life advice, which he compiled into his book, Advice from America. Today, we're going to hear a little bit about his experiences, and he is going to share what he has learned from this experience. Good afternoon. Thank you so much for joining me on the third episode of the SAC podcast. I obviously read your article on The Lantern and was super interested in your recent project called Advice from America, and just interested in your story in general. So I can't wait to chat and hear a little bit more about that and a little bit more about your personal story. So if you could just start off with a general introduction and our listeners can kind of get to know you a little bit.
Sweet. Thanks for having me on here. It's always fun to talk about my journey as a Buckeye, especially just because I graduated in May of 2020. So it's only been a couple of years, but it's been a pretty eventful couple of years. So I'm Imran. Like you said, I'm Imran Nouri. I grew up in Columbus, Ohio. I live in Chicago today. I studied business, specifically marketing at Ohio State, and minored, I think, in design thinking, which was interesting. The last couple of years I started a nonprofit as a student at Ohio State after being the president of Buckeye-thon, and I ran that nonprofit for about 2.5 years before having to shut it down because it just wasn't working out. After that, I was doing marketing for a startup, and then had a quarter life crisis of sorts and sort of decided to quit my job and go live in my car for a few months to go ask 1,000 strangers for life advice. And I photographed every single one of them on black and white film in a 50-year-old camera. And that's what I do full time now is I turn that into a book and I just kind of ship those books. I promote it, do public talks and podcast episodes, things like that. And it's been a really crazy, tumultuous, but fun journey the last couple of years.
That's so awesome. Kind of going into a little bit more specific, I would love to hear about your time at Ohio State. Obviously, you said you were involved with Buckeye-thon. And so just kind of anything you want to share from your time as a Buckeye.
Yeah. Oh, I had such a great time as a student. I feel like, so I grew up in Columbus and my brother went to Ohio State, my older brother. And so I had been on campus plenty of times, but it was a totally different experience to be a student. As I'm sure you've experienced too, Ohio State is huge. And, I had toured a couple other schools, including that state up north, the school up north and the UNC Chapel Hill. And I remember at UNC, I was like, wow, the school is half the size of Ohio State. It's kind of nice. Like, it's kind of nice to be able to bump into people and just, you know, it feels smaller and more approachable. What I loved about Ohio State and what somebody told me when I finally like took it more seriously when deciding where to go to school was that they said you can make a big school feel smaller, but you can't make a small school feel bigger. And I was like, that's it. That's all I needed to hear. So as soon as I got to Ohio State, I threw myself right into Buckeye-thon. That was something I had been involved with as a high school student, their high school programs. And I loved it. I met the most amazing, passionate students there who really just wanted to spend their free time just doing good, like just helping the community, raising a lot of money for kids, for childhood cancer research. I fell in love with the organization, you know, at a college level immediately and threw myself into that fully. So that was my freshman year. And by the time I was a junior, I had earned a spot as the president for Buckeye-thon, where I led us to a $1.7 million fundraising year. That was awesome. I learned a lot from that experience, just from like basically overseeing, when you add in our like operating expenses and everything, overseeing a multi-million dollar organization as like a 21-year-old. That's a unique part of Ohio State, is that there are a few student positions like that, including SAC, Buckeye-thon, OUAB, and a few of those other huge ones. When you're among the leadership team of those groups, you are really learning how to operate at an executive level of a truly like a company. So it was amazing. And outside of that, I was mostly the only other major involvement, at least I had a lot of other involvements. But my other major one was the Fisher Honors Cohort Program, which was like basically like doing an MBA as an undergrad. And I learned a ton. That program challenged me like crazy. And made a lot of my closest friends who I'm still best friends with today. But Yeah, overall, Ohio State was awesome. It was so fun to get involved. It was so fun to learn new things, to be able to make mistakes. And at the end of the day, what I tell people now is when you go to a school the size of Ohio State, you're basically doing a trial run of living in a city. And if you can, you know, take on leadership positions at Ohio State and do well, then you're probably pretty equipped after graduating to do the same at any city that you choose, because Ohio State in itself is like a mid-sized city. So yeah, that was my time at Ohio State. Loved every second of it. Loved being an alum. And I love being in Chicago, where there's a lot of other Buckeyes here too.
Yeah, that's awesome. I've never really heard that little city metaphor, but I think it is so true. And I really love that. I did Buckeye-thon. So I'm a sophomore. So I did Buckeye-thon last year, which was such a cool experience. I'm doing it again this year. The dance marathon's in February. So I'm super looking forward to that. But yeah, I love all those things. And I know a few people in honors cohort. I have a friend who said you came and like spoke to them at some point in the fall, perhaps.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
They did the juniors did their Chicago trip where I spoke to them there. And then I came to Columbus to give basically the same talk about taking risks while you can, like while you're young, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And that was awesome. Like, I think students especially have the liberty to take risks that you can't once you get a little bit older and might start a family or something like that. You know, I love telling students to put themselves out there and not be afraid of failure.
Yeah. That's a super awesome thing. And I would love to get more into that throughout the podcast as well, because I think that is definitely a trend that I've noticed since talking to alumni. I've done a few podcasts now, and all of them somehow bring up taking risks during your undergrad and then kind of the benefit of failure. So I would love to hear more about your experience with that as well. And kind of like on that note, can you tell us a little bit about the nonprofit that you had started? I think you said while you were a student and then continued with after graduation.
Of course. Yeah. So the nonprofit I started after, like I said earlier, I was the president of Buckeye-thon my junior year. And at the end of it, I was like, okay, what do I do next? Like, maybe I'll do a second year of this. I'll try to be the president again, carry out my vision and lead us to an even higher fundraising year. I was like, also, I learned a lot from this experience and met a lot of really incredible people in the philanthropy and nonprofit space around Columbus. Maybe it's time for me to take a huge risk. And so I had been thinking of this idea since I was, I think, a sophomore, maybe a freshman. And the idea was that what if we could get 1 million people to donate $1 for every week of the year? We could collectively donate $52 million a year, $1 at a time. That would be awesome. You know, I was like, this seems like a no-brainer. You know what I mean? Like, why hasn't someone done this already? And I thought about that every day, even while I was the president of Buckeye-thon. And then when the opportunity came, I took a step back, decided to be just kind of a general member for Buckeye-thon, and used my time that summer after my junior year to start the 52 million project. Exactly that. And get 1 million people to donate $1 a week. Long story short for that is really that I was working on it full time as a student, graduated, moved back in with my dad to not have to pay rent. And obviously that 2020 was the year of the start of the pandemic. And so I'm, you know, just chugging away at it. And just it was such a good idea in theory, and in practice it was so challenging to get people to sign up to give $1 a week. You would think it would be easy, and you know, people wouldn't think twice about it. We made it as easy as possible to donate, and it just didn't work out. But at the end of the day, the model we chose was that every week that dollar that you donated went to a different nonprofit fighting poverty. And so by the end of our 2.5 year run, we had donated, I think, over $50,000 to 80 different nonprofits, like 50,000 total, mm-hmm. which was very, very, very far from the overall vision of trying to get $52 million a year. But I learned a lot from the experience. You know, I look back at it as like a failure in the sense that it didn't even get close to the vision I wanted it to get to, but a success personally and for those nonprofits, of course, like, but more like more on the personal side. Just the process of starting a business, a nonprofit, and running it taught me more than I could have learned from anything else, right? Just having to oversee every little detail of every aspect of running a business was crazy, but it really set me up to be able to tackle future challenges way more effectively.
Yeah, that's so cool. That's a very inspiring vision, but I feel like there's always those things in life where you're like, oh yeah, this is simple, $1 a week. Like, that's no big deal. And then you try to get people to commit to that, and it just ends up being a little bit more difficult. But 50,000 for those 80 organizations is still a huge win. So that's super awesome.
Thank you.
And then you were doing some marketing work for a startup, as you mentioned. And then what made you decide to kind of switch from that and take your own route and start the adventure for Advice for America?
There were so many things going through my head at the end of 2021 and beginning of 2022. So end of 2021 is when I shut down the 52 million project. I had spent thousands of hours building it and running it. It was like my baby, only to have it have to shut down. The cost of running it was unsustainable. I had been taking a tiny, and I mean tiny, tiny, tiny salary. It was $7,500 a year. That, I was living off of that and credit cards to be able to run this nonprofit. And I was like, okay, it's not really working how I thought it would. I don't, my passions are pulling me in a new direction. It's time to shut it down. So that was very challenging, right? Like personally, to take something that I'd spent so much time and then just to have to shut it down. It's like, I feel like it's similar to if you had spent your entire 4 years at Ohio State getting your degree, learning and all of that, and then something happens where you just have to like give the degree back and you're not allowed to say you did that anymore. You know what I mean? It's kind of like that. Not a perfect analogy, but it was going to be gone, just done. No, so that was really challenging. Again, learned a lot from it. After that, I got a job overseeing marketing for a small startup based out of Cleveland. And at the time I was like, well, I got a marketing degree. This startup is asking me to oversee their marketing. Essentially I was functioning as their chief marketing officer. And again, at that time I was like, what, 24? And so I was like, this is pretty sick. Like, this is pretty crazy to be overseeing a company's marketing at this age. I thought it would be great, and I just didn't love it. Like, I something about it, I was like, I don't like the 9 to 5. I didn't really like the company specifically. I liked my boss as a person, but he wasn't a very good like leader as a or a manager. And so it just got me thinking, like, okay, just went through the pandemic, just shut down something I've spent thousands of hours building. I'm in a 9 to 5 job that kind of sucks. What is this going to be in my life forever? I'm like, what is this? This can't be it. That's what I was thinking. And so the question I asked myself was, what would I do with my life if I had 1 year left to live? Like, very seriously, what would I do with my final year? And it brought me back to an idea I had thought of as a junior, which was to go around the country, talk to strangers as a way of pushing myself just radically out of my comfort zone, to basically force my comfort zone to expand, to get comfortable talking to complete strangers, to collect stories. And to expand on that too, I was like, I grew up painting and making photos. I've been an artist basically my whole life. And so after shutting down my nonprofit and graduating college and having time to do whatever I want again, I was reconnecting with the artist side of myself. I was like, I'm going to create this gigantic art series of 1,000 portraits of complete strangers while figuring out the meaning of life and pushing myself way out of my comfort zone. And so I was like, basically, screw it. Like, I'm going to do this. So I planned for a few months, saved for a few months, took out a personal loan, and then did it. Just went and did it.
That's so awesome. I was on your website earlier and I saw the picture of you with that family. So did you just like kind of just go where the wind took you, or did you have like certain stops and like a specific route and like where'd you stay? I'm so curious about like the logistics about the whole thing.
Good questions. So I kind of like knew the order of states that I would go in, but I did not have a specific route that I was going to follow. And I had friends around the country who could host me here and there, but for the most part, I was like, to make this happen with the budget that I can make it work with, which was $10,000. That's the personal loan amount that I took. That was the max I was willing to spend on 100 days of traveling. That basically meant no hotel rooms, like maybe 4 or 5 hotel stays at all. But other than that, just sleeping in my car. So I just went like kind of like what you just said. Like, I kind of just went where the wind took me. Like, I knew I needed to hit each of the lower 48 US states. I kind of just planned each morning where I was going to go. And then I would stop at downtowns or parks or like anywhere where people might be. And I would just walk around with my camera, usually wearing my yellow Crocs. And I would walk, just look for anybody who was alone. Because when I tested this on a smaller scale in Chicago, I found out that I could get higher quality interactions with people when I was one-on-one with them than if they were with their friend. Because if, think about it, if you're with your friend and someone asks you, what do you know now that you wish you knew earlier? The first thing you're probably going to do is turn to your friend and say, I don't know, what do you think? You know, and it's not about what does your friend think. It's what do you like deep down? What do you think you would tell yourself when you were younger, even if younger means last week? So yeah, I would just walk up to people who are alone, give them my spiel, and then I'd talk to them for as long as they were willing to talk to me for. Sometimes it was as little as 2 minutes. Sometimes it was up to an hour. And I tried to get about 20 people per state, and I would just keep going. But you mentioned the family that I stayed with in Mississippi. So first of all, full transparency for anybody listening, I am a South Asian Indian man. And so I'm visibly like a brown person of color, right? And so I was nervous about going into the deep South, especially because I grew up in Ohio where you know, there were plenty of other South Asian folks in Columbus. But I'd never really spent time in the deep South. So did not expect to find a random guy at a coffee shop in a town of 11,000 people, Brookhaven, Mississippi, to come up to me first and say, hey, are you a photographer? And then we struck up a conversation. He was a photographer too. And he was like 2 years younger than me. And he's like, you know, how about instead of staying at a rest area tonight, how about you come stay with me and my wife and kids? We've got an extra room and we'd love to host you. And I'll teach you how to ride a motorcycle and you can hold my guns and all this. And I was like, okay, great. Let's do it. So, you know, I had good vibes from him. I was willing to take the risk. I could tell he was, you know, not going to, you know, screw me over somehow. But yeah, it was crazy. Things like that happened all over the place. Like I only stayed with strangers twice, but it was amazing to just go up to people and ask them about life. Like, what do they think about making the most of life? What are their regrets? What are their failures? What would they tell their younger self if they could travel back in time and talk to their younger self? And it was just like, people really opened up to me because with a stranger, there's no judgment, right? Mm-hmm. They don't know you. They don't know your past. They don't know people that you know. So you're a safe space. And so that's what I did. And it was nuts. Like, it was just amazing to learn about life that way.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I'm assuming, maybe I'm wrong, but that you kind of like, did you tell them about your project and kind of your goal and what you were doing when you were in the conversation? Or did you go up and introduce yourself and then be like, can I ask you a few questions? I'm doing this project.
Yeah. So the,
people, like, respond to that.
Yeah, the exact way that I would do it is I would walk up to someone, and I'd always be holding my old camera in my hand too. And I'd walk up to someone and say, excuse me, can I ask you a question real quick? And like 99% of people were like, sure, what's up, you know? And then I'd say, oh, I'm driving across the country talking to 1,000 strangers and asking them about life advice. If you've got 2 minutes, I'd love to ask you a life question. And 80% of the people said, sure, well, let's do it. The other 20% had one reason or another. Maybe they were on their way to a meeting. Maybe they didn't want to have their photo taken. Maybe they were just in a bad mood. But 80% of people were like, yeah, sure, why not? Like, that's so cool. I'd love to be a part of it. I was shocked. Like, that was a pretty high success rate overall. There were some cities where I had zero people say no. And there were other cities where I had like 20 to 30 people say no, where people were just more hesitant about a random dude approaching them with a camera and yellow Crocs, you know, which I get it. Like, I understand. I think I'd be a little bit cautious too, if I were in their shoes, but, I that's what I would do. Just like, totally honest with them. At that time, I didn't know that I was going to publish this into a book. I was just like, I'm really just trying to figure out the meaning of life. And I'm hoping you can help me figure it out. But I told them something. They were like, what are you going to do with this? And I'm like, I don't know yet, but maybe it'll be a book. Maybe it'll be an exhibition. Who knows? Maybe it'll be nothing. Maybe I'll just keep it for myself. But we know now that I ended up turning it into a book.
Yeah. How did that come about? Like, obviously it was kind of an idea, but what made you decide to take that path with it?
Yeah, I decided to turn it into a book, I think, towards the end of the trip, probably in the last third of my trip. That's the point where I was like, I'm not hearing anything new anymore. I'm just hearing the same pieces of advice that I've already heard from new people in new places, which I was like, it's mostly a good thing. It proves that we all have a lot in common. It proves that we're all going through a very similar, like, lived human experience. But I was at that point, I was like, huh. I think the world needs to hear and see that message, the fact that we all have so much in common. And wouldn't it be so powerful if someone could hold all 1,000 of these photos in their hands with the pieces of advice and to see for themselves, like the pattern of like, this is how many people said they wish they wouldn't have gotten married. This is how many people said they wish they would have saved more when they were younger. This is how many people said they wanted to become who they knew they were sooner, but they couldn't because of society's expectations of them. You know, to see that over and over and over again from people who look different, from people of different ages, and from people in different states, that's a powerful message. And like for me to experience that, I wanted to share that with everyone, because I think it's really easy to look at just the news or just the worst things happening, like just TikTok. Like the algorithm feeds us the most enraging content, which is easy to see as that's all that's happening. And the truth is that's not all that's happening. Like there's a lot of good out there. I think most interactions between humans are either neutral or positive, but the negative ones stand out, which is what makes it tough to see the good in the world. And so I thought I need to turn this into some kind of book so that people can see that good in the world and the people around them.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I think the way you design your book, I think is also super cool because it's so simple, but it holds like so many people and so many diverse, like you were saying, diverse backgrounds and different people. But like the reality is it's pretty simple and we're all human. And I think that like, I don't know if it was that symbolic when you were designing it, but I really like how the book is just the black and white and all condensed into one. I thought that was, I think that's really cool. Okay, this next question, I don't know if you have an answer because you did talk to 1,000 strangers, but I'm curious if you have a favorite anecdote or a favorite thing or a favorite conversation or a favorite person you interacted with.
Yeah.
Or a few.
There's so many that I was like, what a special interaction to have. By far, the one that stands out the most for me and for anybody who hears about my journey is stranger number 549. His name was Don Kasky. And usually I don't share the names of the strangers, but this guy was actually like fairly well known. I ran into him in Colorado Springs. And he was like this guy, just this tall white man with a big gray beard. And he had like hundreds of tiny tattoos all over his arms and his legs. And he came up to me first too. A previous stranger had even told me that he had walked up to them and struck up a conversation with them too. So that stranger initially was like, there's some guy here who's also talking to strangers. I was like, what do you mean? You know, there's another one of me. Like I was kind of expecting to see a literal clone of myself. And obviously he's not a literal clone of me. But it turns out this guy, Don Kasky, was had been diagnosed at the end of 2019 with stage 4 kidney cancer. And so he was given like a death sentence. He's like, he is going to die sometime in the next few months to few years. So at that time he decided, I am going to utilize whatever time I have left to make human connections, to make as many human connections as possible. And he chose to do that by getting matching tattoos with complete strangers. And so, but when I had met him, he had over 400 matching tattoos with complete strangers. And that had been in the span of like 2 years, basically 2.5 years.
Wow.
And it was crazy because he was from Toledo, Ohio. I'm from Columbus, Ohio. And we met in Colorado Springs. He was there to pick up his son from jail. I was like, what is happening? Like, what is this? You know, this felt like stars aligning. And so he gave me his life advice, which was about working less and experiencing life more and connecting with people more. But then I was like, you know what, man? This feels like a sign from the universe. If you believe in God, it feels like a sign from God. If you don't believe in God, for me, I was like, this is a sign from the universe that we need to get a matching tattoo. And this needs to be my first tattoo. So sure enough, I stayed around for an extra 2 days so we could get a tattoo appointment. And we both got a tattoo of a roll of film because I was shooting my photos on film. It was amazing to connect with him that way. I was the 435th person to get a matching tattoo with him. And he was so pumped about what I was doing. He was so excited. We kept in touch after. He was so excited to see the book. He was like, you got to put me on the cover, man. I was like, I will. Unfortunately, he passed about a year ago, last February, 2023. But he did see his photo, which I was really glad about. Unfortunately, he didn't live long enough to see the book, which is, he would have loved it. But I wrote a whole chapter about him in the book too, because it was just such a special experience. And yeah, by far, he's the one that stood out the most. Again, I went searching for the meaning of life. And in a lot of ways, I feel like I found it in Don as a man who was actively dying. I was like, the meaning of life's just to live, like to fully experience it. Things are going to be good and things are going to be bad. And there's going to be a lot of in between. But at the end of the day, like, you just got to embrace it fully, like the good, the bad, and the in between, because that's how you live a full life. You can't expect for things to get good all the time. Things will never be good all the time, no matter how much money you have, no matter how great your family is, your friends are. Things will always be good and bad and in between. So Don was like the perfect example of that. The dude had a death sentence, but was living his life so fully, and not every day was good. He was there to pick up his son from jail. You know, that's not a good time. Mm-hmm. But he was making the most of it regardless. So yeah. That was like the middle point of the trip, the perfect chance to learn about the meaning of life. Got my first tattoo. Now I've got like 8 or 9, you know, I'm building up a little sleeve. And so He's the one that stands out the most.
That's so cool. That's so cool. And I think it's cool too, because the question you kind of asked yourself at the beginning was, what would I do if I had 1 year left to live? And like, it's tragic that he was in that situation, but also cool that you guys had like the same kind of purpose and you met somewhere completely random in the middle. So that's
really awesome. Exactly.
That's really cool. This is kind of a more, well, generic question. You can answer it specific to what you learned on your trip or just kind of in general as someone who's had quite a lot of different experiences. But what would you say is like the biggest lesson that you've learned either at Ohio State or since graduating, and like one thing you would change and do differently, and then something that like if you were to recommend to one person one thing to do in their life, what would it be?
Ooh, okay, that's kind of a three-parter, right? Wait, so that's
that was a lot. However,
the
you
first
want.
Part is what was like a lesson learned since graduating? Is that
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Okay, I think the best things that have happened to me in the past few years have happened as a result of failure. And to clarify a little bit, like if you put yourself in a position where you will never fail, you're also never going to grow. The only way to grow is to fail, and to fail often, to fail big. And so for me, you know, I had the most incredible experiences by failing with my nonprofit. I had to shut it down. By failing to get a job that I loved, I had to quit that job. You know, I learned my lessons by just putting myself out there and hearing no from these strangers over and over again, right? 80% said yes. That also means 20%, like a couple hundred were like, yeah, sorry, I don't want to do that. That's pretty like, it can be demoralizing. That's failing over and over and over again. Sometimes it was like 10 people in a row and I'm like, God, like I'm just off my game today, or am I picking the wrong people or what? The best thing, that's my biggest learning over the last couple of years. Just like every time I fail, I grow exponentially. Like I learn a lot. I keep going. I persist. And that persistence combined with like the hard work is like almost a guaranteed winning combination, persistence and hard work. Because I just saw someone recently who said this, and I can't remember who it was. I think it was some actor. He said, if you quit now, persist, you might fail. You might end up, you know, having to shut whatever you're working on down. But if you quit right now, you are guaranteed you're failing, right? If you quit right now, that's it. Game over. You're writing the period at the end of your sentence. So really the key to success, which I've also figured out over the last couple of years, is just keeping going, right? Like just not stopping, not letting the obstacles get in the way, just finding solutions to crazy problems and persisting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. What was part 2 and 3 of this question?
Part 2 and 3 kind of are like same question, but flipped. One thing you would change and like do differently in your experiences, and then one thing that you would recommend above like anything else.
Ooh, okay. Well, for that first one, like for one thing I would change, do you mean about like doing the journey across America or just like in life?
I mean, it's kind of an open-ended question, however you want to answer it. It could either be,
okay,
which I know is like makes it way more difficult to
answer.
No,
that's okay. But I've got an answer for you. So okay. I think for me, especially thinking about when I was a student, I was like really hustling a lot. I was in my honors classes. I took, I had like 40 hours a week of involvements, which was nuts. And also in like just in being in that president of Buckeyethon position, you're kind of trained to be a really good representative of the university. You know, what I was literally told was like, if you are, you know, drunk at Midway and being sloppy, and someone, if the wrong person takes a video of that and sends it to the senior leadership at the university, That is a bad look for Buckeye-thon. It's a bad look for Buckeye-thon in front of the university leadership. It's a bad look in front of our donors. It's like, it's just sloppy. It's not a good look for a multi-million dollar organization's leader, especially in the world of nonprofits, which is more sensitive to that. And so I was really careful. Like, I was always thinking about it was almost like it felt like someone was always watching. And in a lot of ways, that was true. And in a lot of ways, it wasn't. And I know that now. You know, the thing I would change is to find a better balance. Like, it's okay to be a really involved student. It's okay to be like maintaining some kind of public image. At the same time, I think I really restricted myself from like going out more or trying new things, or just prioritizing friendships. So I really wish that during my time as a student at Ohio State specifically, that I wish I would have just prioritize those friendships more, like took myself a little bit less seriously, been a little bit less judgmental, open to new things, new experiences, new ideas, which I was like, sorry, it's my cat. You might hear him purring into the microphone. But yeah, I just wish I would have, you know, taken myself less seriously and tried new things more. And then to your third part, you said, what would I tell someone? Like,
yeah, like your strongest piece of advice.
Yeah. Oh, I would say the my best piece of advice, I think, at least for students, especially like for younger folks, is just the hardest part is getting started for anything. That is literally true of anything, whether it's working out or starting a new job or changing your career, whether it's asking someone out. Like, the hardest part is getting started. And then it gets easier and easier and easier. Everything is a muscle. You know, that's my advice. Like, failure is a muscle. Winning is a muscle. Everything, everything, everything. The hardest part is the first time you do it. It'll still be challenging the second time. It'll still be challenging the third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh time, but less so. And the more you do it, the easier it gets. The more you fail, the less you'll be afraid of failure in the future. You know, the more you work out, the first time you're going to be so sore. The second time you'll still probably be pretty sore. But the third, fourth, fifth, sixth time you'll be sore, but you'll be used to it. And you can push yourself harder and you can work out better. You know, that's life. As soon as you recognize that, you can do anything. Like, you can be fearless. Like, truly, it will always be hard to start. And then once you get going, you're like a snowball just tumbling down a hill to success. That's the best advice I could give to somebody who's actually anybody, but especially younger folks.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. So I think you had mentioned that since the book came out and everything, and you have kind of been like speaking about it, do you typically go to schools or are you kind of more directed towards businesses? I'm just curious about what you're pursuing now.
Yeah. So I've been doing my, like promoting my book and shipping out my book full time as in addition to just talking about it. So my talks are for a wide variety of folks. Sometimes it's students. Sometimes it's like, I'm doing one for the Alumni Association next week. I'm doing one for Fisher again at the end of this month. I'm doing a TED talk in Atlanta in February. And then I'm giving a solo talk about what I did at South by Southwest, which is one of the biggest conferences in the world, in March. So it really ranges. Then, like, for example, I think also in March, I'm giving a talk to a group of seniors, and everybody just wants to hear the story in person. And even this morning, I had a meeting with someone. We were planning like a talk that's coming up. And I was like, so what do you want like your attendees to get out of this? And she said, well, your book has a lot of information, but I know there are more stories beyond what the advice that people shared was. And I want the attendees to feel like they got a really special experience being able to hear about like the context of these strangers that you met beyond their advice. And so that kind of applies to anybody. And so I'm just really like, the biggest thing right now in my talks is just that I'm trying to spread this message that we all have a lot more in common with one another than we think. That's not to say that we have to ignore our differences. That's not to minimize our differences or the challenges in America. But as long as we're just focusing on our divisions, there no progress can be made that way. You know, it just further divides all of us. And so I'm trying to help people see the light that We're all humans. We're all humans going through a very similar human experience in slightly different ways. We're so close to one another. And if we can see that, then we can make the correct changes for ourselves for the future. That's the biggest message I'm trying to spread for anybody and anyone who will listen.
Yeah, that's so awesome. That kind of ends the questions I had, but if there's anything else like you want to share or speak about or ask me anything else, but if that's
I think you covered the bases. Yeah, I like the questions you asked. I appreciate that.
Yeah, of course. Well, I just want to thank you again so much for coming on the podcast. I'm really excited about this episode and just to get a different perspective because I think what you did is so unique. And yeah, I know I'm going to order the book, so I hope that it inspires some other people to do so as well. But yeah, thank you again. And I hope you have a great weekend and good luck with all of your upcoming talks and everything. Super exciting. And I will
Thanks
look
so much,
for your
Claire.
I'll look for your TED talk. That's so cool.
Perfect. Definitely. Yeah, I don't know when it'll be up eventually, but
Yeah.
maybe it'll be up later this year. But thanks again for reaching out. Let me know if
Yeah.
I can ever help in any way in the future.
Amazing. Thank you so much. Have a great
Cool.
one.
You too. Bye.
Bye. SAC Podcast, signing off.